Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot. Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. The focus of the conversation today is the two-row wampum renewal campaign, which marks the history and looks to the future of the relations between Native and non-Native peoples in upstate New York and across the nation. With me today to talk about this are two guests. Orrin Lyons is a faith keeper of the Onondaga Nation Turtle Clan and serves on the advisory committee for the campaign. He's appeared on the program in the past. Andy Major is the campaign's project coordinator, and he's also affiliated with the Neighbors of the Onondaga Nation and the Syracuse Peace Council. Andy, welcome to the program, and Orrin, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much.
Orrin, let me start with you. Can you give me an overview of what the campaign is, how it got started, and what it's trying to accomplish?
It's a history. It's an old history. This year, 1613, is the 400th anniversary of a discussion that took place in the Upper Hudson, in Mohawk country, 400 years ago. It was, I believe, 1609 when Henry Hudson first came up. He was an English captain on a Dutch ship. And that was followed up in 1613 by the Dutch. And they, of course, are known for their entrepreneurship and their travel all over the world. And here they were, up in Haudenosaunee country, Mohawk country. So the discussion was, and what they wanted was to open up a trade route. That's what they did, and that's what they've always doing. They do today. Amsterdam was a center in Europe at that time of international events and so forth. And so they asked for passage, free passage, so they could trade. And our leaders said, well, you know, we've been watching you for some time now, and it doesn't look like you're going to be going home anytime soon. So shouldn't we extend this discussion as to a relationship? And they agreed, and they began that discussion. Now, this discussion takes place over a period of, I would say, 40 years, and always improving and always improving. But the initial discussion at that time, they said, well, how shall we greet one another? And they suggested that we call them father because of the love that denotes between father and son. And the discussion was taken on by the Haudenosaunee, who had now called for a general council. So now we had leaders from all of the five nations at that time, the Mohawk and Oneida, Onondaga, Cayuga, and Seneca. And so discussion primarily being led by the Mohawks. But they said, after some discussion, it is true that there's great love between father and son. But it also, there's the chastisement that the father has and the responsibility he has in the conduct. So we would suggest that we call one another brothers. Mm. And they agreed. They said that would be the first thing. The second would be, what is it that we're talking about here? And they said we're a confederacy of peace, based on peace. We'll talk about peace and friendship. And how long will it last? They said, as long as the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, as long as the waters run downhill, as long as the grass is green. And they thought that was a good agreement. And it was quite simple. Peace, friendship, forever. Well, not quite, is it? Forever is contemporary. Anyway, that was the foundation of that discussion. And it began to be improved. And so they said, how will we conduct ourselves? They said, well, we see your ship that you brought here has many colors, people. You have religions, varieties. and many things, is that our canoe is simple. Our life is hard, quite fundamental. We have our laws, we have our rules. And so we, these two vessels then, will travel down the river of life, side by side, in peace and friendship, for as long as the grass is green. And they thought that that was good. Well, they said, but we should bind our vessels. And they talked about binding their vessel to the shore. And that whole discussion goes on. It goes from the binding being rope, and that's not going to last too long. And how about chains? Well, that rust, that will deteriorate. So they came to silver. And they said, silver requires polishing. So that's where the silver covenant chain came from. So they bind the vessels together with a covenant chain. And if you look in your history, you'll see that reference, 300 years of that reference of polishing the chain, of the covenant chain. And it's used by all the French, by the English. They all knew and understood that. That's the foundation of that two-row belt. Mm. And they said, our vessels will travel down a river. They don't come together. And they said, well, if in the future, if some of your people will come into our boat and some of our people from the boat will come into your canoe. And they said that will happen over a period of time. But more of our people more likely be in your boat because it's bigger, has more things, and much fewer of your people in our canoe because it's such a hard life. But they will happen. They said, our concern would be the person that has one foot in a canoe and one foot in a boat. And there will be many. Mm. And they said, well, if there is in the future a great wind which would blow our vessels apart, then those people would fall in to this river and no one on this side of creation could help them. And then further they said, how will we know each other? How will our children know each other in the future? And the leaders answered, you will know us by the way we dress. That's to me, that's one of the most profound instructions to our own people. Mm. Because it's talking about your culture, it's talking about your identity, it's talking about who you are. Very simple statement.
Andy, is the then part of the purpose of the campaign to pick up on something Oren said to the polishing of the silver? Is it to renew that polishing and to renew that relationship in some way?
Exactly, Grant. We chose the name Renewal as part of the campaign very consciously to say that this is both about recollecting this history, mm-hmm. giving Haudenosaunee leaders the opportunity to share this history with people throughout New York State and beyond, but then to build on this history, to move forward, to look at the many crises we face as a culture and as a people, crises of violence, of inequality, and of environmental catastrophe potentially. And we very much believe, as neighbors of the Onondaga Nation, that that this simple vision of a way of living together holds great promise for finding a sustainable direction for the future.
And I know that there are many events that are going to happen as a part of this campaign. Could you tell me which one is going on now and what that leads to and what's in store for the future?
There have been over 30 events already across New York State, here at Syracuse Stage, just recently at Onondaga Lake, down in New York City at the National Museum of the American Indian in Poughkeepsie and Buffalo, far and wide. Right now, there's a group of Haudenosaunee paddlers who's a little over halfway between Onondaga and Albany on the first leg of a journey, paddling in canoes and kayaks, carrying a replica of the two-row wampum belt that Oren described, with them to Albany. That belt and the paddlers will then rest for a couple of weeks, and there will be a larger trip down the Hudson, an effort to what we're calling is bringing the two row to life. Mm. So over 200 people will launch in Rensselaer across the river from Albany on July 28th, Sunday morning, and will paddle in two rows, one row of Haudenosaunee and other Native people, and side by side a row of non-Native allies from the Albany area to New York City over 13 days, seeking to bring this vision of peace and friendship to life. And in doing so, holding events and meeting people and sharing this vision of how we might live together, how we might find a sustainable future.
And does it culminate in the city with a particular kind of celebration then?
Yeah, we land in Manhattan on August 9th, which is the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, an event commemorated each year by the United Nations. So we'll land on the west side of Manhattan at one of the piers on the Hudson and be welcomed by local leaders and dignitaries. And then there'll be a march across Manhattan to the United Nations, where we'll be greeted by the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. And then some people will go in for their formal event later that afternoon, and Oren will be one of the speakers on that panel. So what we're trying to do really is to educate our people and to call on us to look at this history, to look at this responsibility which we took on 400 years ago, and assess how well have we done of living up to our obligations. And we believe we've fallen far short. But now is a time to look at that and make amends and move forward together.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Oren Lyons and Andy Major about the Two Row Wampum Renewal Campaign. Oren, I wanted to ask you a question about how some of the news regarding the Oneida Nation may be having an impact on getting the word out about this particular renewal campaign. Has it been difficult to keep public attention on the renewal campaign and these big cultural and historical themes that you're talking about while the negotiation process between the governor and the Oneida Nation regarding its casino revenues has been going on?
I think the Two Row far outshadows that discussion. We don't even think about that.
Okay.
It's not part of our concern at all. The media and the response that we're getting from our counterparts, our brothers from across the sea, has been very, very good. It's been gracious, and it's a lot of vitality there. And I think that's basically what we want to remind people, that these are not Indian treaties. These are treaties between Indian nations and other peoples. And the Two Row is the grandfather of all treaties. That was the first one that was made way back, 1613. And you will hear those words, as long as the grass is green, the water flows downhill, in many, many treaties across the nation afterwards. So it set a standard. It set a standard that was followed fairly clearly right across the country, and generations in between. So there was numerous. Rick Hill, who is a Tuscarora, and probably, I would say he's taken John Mohawk's place as the intelligentsia for Iroquois. He's very quick, and he's busy. And John Mohawk, Rick, and myself were always trying to consolidate this history. Mm. John passed on very quickly, very unexpectedly. And so Rick has picked that up quite a bit. And he gave me three volumes of meetings that were commemorative of wampum. So wampum, in those years, the 300 years, 400 years, after the Revolution and the beginning of the United States, the wampum was still used. As a matter of fact, the first official, or one of the most official acts of the Continental Congress, was president of the Continental Congress, he made a belt. He made a peace belt and presented it to the Six Nations. It was a neutrality belt of neutrality, 1776. And which ensured that the Six Nations was not going to jump on either side. And that was their request. That was made 1775 in Albany, but which used to be Fort Orange, just as New York used to be New Amsterdam. So people forget that, you know. And so I think this is a reminder to one and all that this is a long history, and that those belts and the procedures, that was the political currency of the times. That's how meetings were conducted. So the instruction, you know, Felix Cohen, very famous historian and worked with the United States, made a statement, and he called it the Americanization of the white man. Because prior to the Revolution, when you said Americans, you were talking about Indians. You weren't talking about white people because they were Dutch or English or something else. So when you said Americans, so suddenly people became Americans. But that process was a long process, 300-400 years of interactions. And when you look at that list of meetings and how these meetings were conducted with wampum exchange back and forth all the time, procedures, you get some sense of the history that this country is lacking, seriously lacking in understanding how it came to be. So it's not a simple statement when somebody says, well, you know, the Indians had something to do with the development of this country. We were instructing, serious instruction. And a statement that was made at the meeting in 1775 in Albany, peace meeting, the Continental Congress, 62 members sitting there meeting with the Haudenosaunee, said, you instructed us in 1744 at Lancaster to make a union like yours. We are now taking your advice. Now, you can't get more direct than that. But I know you've never heard that. And you're a learned man. And the question is, why not? Why is it that you haven't heard that? You couldn't have anything more direct. And they went on, and they said, we teach our children about the bundle of arrows. So that's the unity, to be united. Now, that message is 1,000 years old. That's the peacemaker's message. So you were instructed very heavily during those periods of time on governance and principles and values. And that's America. That's where it came from.
Andy, I want to come back to the topic I broached with Oren a few minutes ago and get your perspective from the standpoint of someone who's working with the non-Native peoples here in upstate. And again, this casino deal, has that complicated the effort to get the word out to folks? Because clearly it's the deal and the deal-making process raised or re-raised a lot of frustrations on the part of many local residents about their perceived unfairnesses regarding on taxes and land, other economic issues. So has that been something that you've had to deal with?
The casino issue currently, those negotiations hasn't really. But okay. The broader identification of many people with the Oneidas and Indian nations having casinos has been an issue. And, you know, we're very fortunate here in central New York because the Onondaga are governed traditionally the same way that they have for 1,000 years. The Oneidas made up this form of government that allows them to have casinos and to have this economic empire. So as we travel around the state, people aren't familiar with a traditional governance style, and they tend to associate it with other approaches. And particularly down in the Hudson Valley, where there's no Native community at all, there are scattered peoples, but there's no there's no recollection or understanding of an intact community that continues to function the way people do at Onondaga, to honor their ceremonies, to have chiefs raised by clan mothers and accepted by the council. So it's a very different situation. But part of what we've found, and Oren referenced this a little bit before, is this great eagerness for people to learn and embrace this history and embrace the promise of a future of respect, one which has not, unfortunately, been the past for this last several hundred years.
I'm talking with Oren Lyons, faith keeper of the Onondaga Nation Turtle Clan, and Andy Major, project coordinator for the Two Row Wampum Renewal Campaign. Oren, we were talking, and Andy just mentioned this, about the Onondaga's decisions about gambling. And when you and I were on the program, you were on the program last time, you had some very interesting comments about why the Onondaga did not and would not pursue gambling as a revenue source. And I was just curious, have you changed your views at all since we spoke, or do you still see this the same way?
It just gets more obvious, doesn't it? I mean, naturally, you know, with the so-called agreement, which is still not seriously a fact. It has to go through quite a few challenges yet.
Right.
I think they're going to have a hard time with that, because we have had a reaction from the Oneidas to the council. You know, they said, we didn't have anything to say about that. Nobody asked us. You know, just statement coming from Ray Albrighter, you know, who uses the title of representative. Of what? Of who? You know, he never says. Otherwise, he has another title, CEO. It's kind of a quasi-government. I'm not sure exactly where. It's really not related to us. Mm. So I don't know how they raise their leaders and so forth and so on. But it isn't the traditional style, because to order, raise the leaders with the Confederacy, it's the Confederacy that sits and says, yes, you are, or no, you aren't. It's not the individual nation. So it's a long, long procedure. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that whole discussion is going on, and it's quite a serious one, you know, and it will affect people. But our instruction to long ago, you know, this was our third message we received, the guy we owed the good word, spiritual message, and shown a deck of cards, and said, this can destroy your nation. And it's a broader term, because it can destroy the United States as well. You know, gambling is like chewing on your own arm. You know, you're taking money from your own people, and they suffer the consequence. And they're not wealthy people that gamble. Wealthy people gamble in the internet, or as they use, the Dow Jones is where they're at, you know, and that's pretty hilly territory. And just looking at that and watching them, it's like mowing grass, the way I see it. You know, the Dow Jones gets to be 1,500, and then it drops. So they sell at the high level. When it drops, they buy again. Then when it gets high, they mow it again. So they have an amazing system of income there, you know. It's beyond most people. That's that 1% we talk about. So I think that it's good instruction. Gambling's not good. It's not good for anybody. And it's destructive to the economy, you know, to the people who have to live every day, spend their money in the wrong place. But anyway, there's a percentage, I guess, that goes to government. I'm not sure. You know, but I think that's the way it goes. At least it gets to that point. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people in this gambling where that money doesn't go to the government. And just kind of a dark hole there. Mm.
Andy, let me ask you another question about a different kind of challenge. Oren, I think you alluded to this before in some ways, but the written treaty that's associated with the two-row wampum, the authenticity of that has been challenged by historians. How do you see that fitting in? How does that affect the campaign? What's the position of the campaign regarding that?
Our campaign is not based on any written version of the treaty. In fact, there is no authenticated written version of it. And Oren and the other Haudenosaunee leaders talk about when the treaty was made, that the Dutch wrote it on parchment, and the Haudenosaunee leaders said, that's fine, you do that, we'll string it into wampum belts, and when your paper disintegrates or burns or is lost, come and we'll show you the wampum belt to remind you about what the agreement is about. So we base the campaign on the oral history that has been passed down from generation to generation with the use of the wampum belts. It's unfortunate that a very small group of academics, and actually none of them are historians, have chosen to attack the campaign based on a document that we don't even cite as the basis for what we're doing. There are many historians and people like Rick Hill, or there's a historian, John Parmenter, down at Cornell, who also has documented the use of the polishing the chain and referencing this agreement with the Dutch.
And I was reading some of Hill's materials, and Oren spoke to this before. It's all the other pieces of history that point to this in various ways outside of this written document. Right?
Exactly. In fact, we would say that one of the ways that we're not honoring this two-row is by insisting that the only valid recording of history is written documentation, when many, many peoples around the world, the Haudenosaunee included, were not people of the written word, but were people of an oral history. So to deny the validity of that as a source of knowledge is quite ethnocentric.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations, and my guests are Oren Lyons of the Onondaga Nation and Andy Major from the Two-Row Wampum Renewal Campaign. Oren, as you already spoke of earlier, the Renewal Campaign marks a 400-year-old history of relations between the Haudenosaunee and white settlers. What do you think the next 400 years is going to bring?
Well, the instructions that we got from the peacemaker, to make your decisions on behalf of the seventh generation, for the longest time that was, clear. But when you say seven generations to me now, it's pretty murky. That seven generations is murky out there. I don't see a clear seven generations. We're talking the 80-year generation. We're talking the full life generation, not 20 years. The full life generation. So you look that far in the future, and what do you see? It's hard. I peer at that all the time. I look at that all the time. Our chiefs do. It's very hard to see seven generations from now. So I think the times, it's always climate change. And interesting to me, I think the biggest lesson that I'm watching on this canoe trip and the boys and the men that are out there now and rural and women and both non-Indians and Indians out there on the water right now, they're dealing with what we're going to be dealing with. They're dealing with nature. Pretty rough out there. There's water all over the place here. Oneida just got flooded. Mm-hmm. There's water everywhere, and these thunderstorms that are coming, the weather is the indicator of the change. And a good friend with James Hansen, the scientist, and I listen to his counsel quite a bit because he's practical. He just knows what he's talking about. And he said 10,000 years of good weather's over. And it is. Just open your eyes and look.
That's an interesting way to put that. Yeah. Andy, I wanted to know, what's the most important thing that you have learned personally about the Haudenosaunee nations and their members and doing the work that you've been doing on this campaign?
I would say that we're all human, that we all have our strengths and our challenges. And one of the beautiful parts of this project is that more than anything that Neighbors of the Onondaga Nation has done in the past, we've really worked hand in hand with our brothers and sisters at Onondaga and throughout other Haudenosaunee territories as well. And that's been a really wonderful learning experience, not always easy by any means, but I think something that has enriched us and was fundamental to this process, because if we want to go out in the public and talk about this living in peace and respect and friendship and portray this traveling down the river of life side by side, we need to do that work, the fun parts of it and the challenging parts as well.
And if listeners want to know more about this campaign or attend one of the events or even perhaps help out in some way, where should they go?
The website is honorthetworoe.org. You can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Okay. Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. And what I'd like to do, which we've done in the past on the program, is to ask the two of you to answer these not from the perspective of your own personal lives, but from the perspective, in this case, of the relationship between the native and non-native peoples in upstate New York. And Andy, I'll start with you. What's the title of the chapter of life that this relationship is living?
I would say it's rebirth or crisis.
Oren, what do you think?
Yeah, I believe it's the handshake. The handshake is coming back and looking into one another's eyes. I think that's quite important.
Let me stick with you, Oren. Second question. What is this relationship's worst trait?
The lack of the American public to the history of the Native people here. They just do not have the history. And that's serious because you're lacking a whole support system there. And as we did in the beginning, we were right there in the beginning. We were holding your hand, instructing you. And people don't know that. But I think it's the values that we were passing on, which is fundamental today, the values.
Andy, what's your sense of the worst trait?
That my side of the river has not lived up to our obligation, and that threatens the future for all of us.
And I'll stay with you, the last of these. What achievement in this relationship so far has surprised you the most?
The fact that the Onondaga and the Haudenosaunee have persisted despite hundreds of years of efforts to get them to assimilate, to destroy their culture, to wipe them out, that they have persisted is truly amazing.
And Oren, what aspect of the relationship has surprised you the most?
It's the willingness and the response from, say, for instance, the Netherlands has responded to our invitation. And the Secretary General of the Kingdom of the Netherlands is going to greet us at the UN very happily. So it's quite invigorating and eager. They're eager to do this.
That was Oren Lyons and Andy Major. Thanks so much to both of you for talking with me.
Glad to be with you, Brent.
Please tune in again to WRVO Public Media for more conversations in the public interest.